Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, Jumpin' Jack Flash, it's a gas, gas, gas. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
So today we're going to talk about an alternative to gas-powered vehicles, or what could potentially be an alternative. We're talking about fuel cell technology, and fuel cells can be used for more than just vehicles. Obviously, they can be used for energy production and other methods, but we're mostly focusing on vehicles, right?
Right.
So, fuel cells, what are they? How do they work? What's up with this crazy thing? Do they really just generate electricity and water? Why don't we have this magical technology everywhere? We're going to answer all those questions and more. So, sit back and relax.
Okay, this should be fairly obvious, but maybe quick refresher. What's the problem with gas?
Well, it pollutes. It's polluting both when you're trying to get at the raw materials. It pollutes when you're refining the raw materials into the fuel. It pollutes after you burn the fuel. And there's a limited amount of the stuff out there, and it's not always in places that are easy for us to get to.
Also, it's relatively energy inefficient. A regular gasoline-powered vehicle is only really going to operate at, like, 25% efficiency.
Yeah, you're not going to get, well, and that's
fuel efficiency,
that's the problem
anyway,
with internal combustion engines, right?
Right?
You're losing a lot of that potential energy due to heat. It ends up you losing it by heat. So instead of being able to harness that energy, we just end up releasing it into the environment.
Okay, so when we're talking about a fuel cell vehicle,
yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but essentially we're talking about an electric vehicle
yes.
that has its mode of electricity production coming along with it.
Right.
So most electric cars, you'd say you plug it into the wall, charge up a battery, and then you drive off.
Right.
A gas-powered car, you take your fuel with you, and it makes things explode, and that gives you your power.
Yes.
This is sort of somewhere in the middle. It's an electric car, but you're taking your fuel along with you.
Right. And fuel cells and batteries tend to get, for people who aren't familiar with the technology, it can be a little confusing because they both rely on a similar principle. They're electrochemical energy conversion devices, right? So these are devices, just rattle that off, but these are devices that use an electrochemical reaction to generate electricity. So it's a chemical reaction that, as a result, releases electrons. That's what electricity is, you know, the flow of electrons.
Right.
So we then harness this release of electrons through a circuit. We usually call this a load. We put a load on a battery, and then those electrons can do work. So the classic example, something that everyone does in their physics class, is they build the basic circuit with a little light bulb, and then when you close the switch so that you've completed the circuit, the electrons.
Hopefully,
can,
fingers crossed.
Right, assuming you built everything correctly, which is pretty simple to do, but, you know, leave it to me, I can mess it up. Once the circuit is complete, the electrons can flow from one terminal of the battery through this circuit, doing the work, and then into the other end of the battery. Now, with batteries, this electrochemical process results in an inert material once the electrons come back in and those chemicals have finished their chemical reaction. They usually will last, you know, a good long while depending upon how much load you're putting on the batteries, but eventually you get a dead battery, right? You got a battery that no longer can create electricity sufficient for you to do any work.
Sure. And sometimes you can recharge that battery, right?
Sure. Yeah. And that's essentially reversing that process. That's when you're, instead of harnessing the electrons coming out of the battery, you're shoving electrons back in the battery, screaming the whole time until the battery has reached some level of it's returned to the state it was before you expended all the energy, more or less. Batteries, of course, lose their potency over time. That less and less of the battery will recharge, so that eventually you have to replace them anyway. You'll realize that. Like, anyone who's owned any electronics for any length of time is like, you know, I remember when the battery life on this thing was great, but now it doesn't last half as long as it used to.
And it's not just your imagination.
You know, it really does happen. And there are other things that can happen that make that process go more quickly, which is something you don't want to do. Well, fuel cells are similar to batteries in that you have this electrochemical process, but they're different in that instead of having a set amount of chemicals contained within the unit. You have fuel going into the fuel cell to continuously replenish it, and that is what allows the electricity to continuously generate as long as you have fuel to put into the cell.
Okay, so the chemicals we often hear about in batteries are things like maybe lithium or like, say, lead in old
nickel,
batteries.
Nickel, cadmium.
Yeah, and, something like that. What are the chemicals we're talking about in a fuel cell, and how do they actually produce electricity on the molecular level?
Excellent question. Okay, so they are these very exotic chemicals, okay? You've got hydrogen. Stop me if I start getting, like, crazy here. You got hydrogen, and you've got oxygen.
Okay, so you got what stars are made of and what we breathe.
Yes, exactly. So hydrogen and oxygen. Now, there is a particular molecule that two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen will form if they all get buddy-buddy with each other, which we call water,
right.
H2O. So basically what you're doing is you're creating a chamber where hydrogen and oxygen want to get together, want being, I'm anthropomorphizing obviously, but they have a tendency to get together to form water.
Chemically speaking, they want to.
So it's kind of like a tank with two sides.
Right, and you have a divider in between the two that keeps it from doing this just naturally. And what this divider has also on it, this is an electrolyte membrane in the case of the fuel cells we'll be talking about today. Different fuel cells use different electrolytes. Some use them in membrane form. Some use some molten material. It all depends upon the actual type of fuel cell. But for fuel cell vehicles, they tend to be this kind of permeable, semi-permeable membrane. It looks like plastic wrap.
Sure.
Okay, so this is the electrolyte. It allows positively charged particles to pass through, but not negatively charged particles. All right, now, okay. Coated on this electrolyte membrane is a catalyst. Now, a catalyst, for those who don't remember their chemistry, is something that facilitates a chemical reaction.
It's sort of a third-party negotiator.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things like, hey, let me make things a little easier on you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the travel agent.
Let me introduce you to my friend.
Yeah. So in this case, with a lot of the permeable membrane fuel cells, it tends to be a really exotic and expensive material like platinum, but in nanoparticle form. So you've crushed this stuff into particles that are a billionth of a meter in diameter. I mean, tiny, tiny little particles, smaller than what a light telescope could pick up. All right, so you've coated this membrane with that stuff, and you pressurize the hydrogen, and you force the hydrogen against this membrane. The catalyst tells the hydrogen, hey, I'll let you through, but you got to lose those electrons you're carrying. And a hydrogen carries one electron, right? So the hydrogen ditches the electrons, becomes positively charged ions. Because it's a positively charged ion, it can now pass through that membrane and get over to where all the oxygen atoms are on the other side.
But if it has to lose electrons to become positive, where do those electrons go?
Well, see, first of all, the electrons really want to get back with those hydrogen ions, right? Positive
yes.
and negative charges
attract.
They attract one another. But there's no way they can go through that membrane. However, you've been clever. You've created a back door so that the electrons can scoot through the back door, rush down the hallway, maybe pushing some buttons along the way, and then get to the other side of the chamber and then recombine with their hydrogen buddies and the oxygen new buddies and form water. So in this case, you are actually harnessing the electricity by creating this pathway for the electrons to pass through. That's the anode side of the fuel cell. They come in on the cathode side of the fuel cell. That's where the oxygen is and where the hydrogen comes in to combine with the oxygen to form water. So your end result with your basic hydrogen-based fuel cell, assuming that you don't have any other funky things going on with the electrolyte, is that you get electricity, you get water, and you get heat.
Nice.
Those are your outputs. So you don't have any other, I mean, water vapor is a greenhouse gas, but you don't have any other like toxic gases that are created as a result of this reaction.
So basically the process is, it's kind of like you tear children away from their loving parents and force them to run through a hall in order to get back to their parents. But as they run through the hall, they've got to turn a crank.
Or you want to go to a popular nightclub.
Uh-huh.
Where all the attractive young people are inside, but the bouncer realizes that you are not an attractive young person. I'm talking about myself here. And so you run around the back and find a back door to get in so that you can get into the nightclub.
But
immediately you get exhausted.
It's
but unbeknownst to you,
wheel.
Yeah, you're on a hamster wheel generating energy for the popular
exactly.
young people to dance to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is that's how Daft Punk started.
Cool.
Little-known story.
Good historical process.
Yeah, what the running toddlers and the electrons and Jonathan going to the back door of the club all have in common is they don't produce greenhouse gases. Well, maybe water vapor, but...
Yeah. Yeah, but they're nothing toxic. You don't have any, there's no carbon dioxide in this kind of fuel cell. Depending, I say in this kind of fuel cell because there are other types, depending upon the electrolyte being used or the method being used, that do create some carbon dioxide as a result.
Right.
I'll talk about one of those in a little bit because it's one that, it was one of those news stories that exploded a couple of years ago when it first hit the tech circles. And then, I don't know that many people are aware of what actually it does. It was this mysterious energy generating device, which turned out to just be based on, but turned out to be based on fuel cell technology.
But mainly we're talking about hydrogen fuel cells today.
Yep. I mean, you could talk about methane based fuel cells. That's the other main type. And methane actually is more energy dense than hydrogen is. So that's one reason why you might look at methane instead of hydrogen. But that also can create some other gases as a result of putting it through the fuel cell. And the technology is a few years behind hydrogen based fuel cells because that's where most of the research has gone into.
Okay. So you've got your hydrogen fuel cell set up and this is generating water vapor, heat, and electricity.
Yep.
What do you do with that stuff?
Well, first of all, each fuel cell is a tiny little thing on its own, okay?
Yeah.
So if you were to say, oh, my car has a fuel cell in it, your car would not go anywhere.
Kind of like if your computer had a transistor.
Right, exactly. That's a good example, yes, because you're talking about something that can put out 0.7 volts of electricity. That's not enough to do very much. So what you have to do is you have to have a collection of these fuel cells. That's called a fuel cell stack. And usually you have these separated by bipolar plates, which allow these various fuel cells to work together to generate enough electricity for you to do whatever the work is that you've determined for that particular fuel cell, right? So once you have enough of them to generate enough electricity to do what you want to do, then that electricity obviously does whatever it's supposed to do. In the case of a fuel cell vehicle, it's providing power to an electric motor. So just as a battery would provide the electricity to an electric motor in a traditional electrical vehicle, the fuel cell would do that for this one. The water vapor would be essentially vented. You know, it's exhaust. So you'd lose that. And the heat would just be released to the atmosphere as well. Now, I should also say that fuel cells, the different types operate at different temperatures for the optimal performance, right? There are some fuel cells that do really well at temperatures that are pretty typical for what you would find in a car engine. So that would be okay. The membranes are a little tricky because some of them are very delicate. And as temperatures drop, the membranes become vulnerable to that. So that's actually a problem with some fuel cells is trying to figure out if you happen to be someone who operates a vehicle and say, our friends to the Great White North, a fuel cell vehicle might not be the best choice because that membrane could be damaged in the winter.
Right. That's a problem with a lot of fuel cells, actually.
Yeah.
Even the larger ones that operate at much higher temperatures.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because they heat up to 600 or 800 degrees Celsius, that's Celsius, not Fahrenheit,
right,
kids. You know, it's heating that much and then cooling it back down to room temperature can create a lot of corrosion within the materials that it's made of.
Right. You don't want to have to shut it down more frequently than necessary because it when it's at the optimal temperature, it's performing like gangbusters. But then once you have to shut it down, then obviously you have to take in more energy just to cool it down and then to heat it back up to get it to the right temperature.
So it sounds like even though we've heard about fuel cells mostly being used in application with cars, they'd actually be easier to use in sort of like a stationary system infrastructure, maybe powering a factory or something like that.
Yeah, factories. There are even power generation plants that use fuel cells. These are ones that tend to use the ones you're talking about, Lauren, the ones that operate at really high temperatures. They're really efficient and they put out a great deal of power, but it also means that they cannot be used for applications like driving a car. Because I don't know about you, but personally, I start getting uncomfortable if my car gets over 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And if it's operating at 800 degrees Celsius, I have a feeling I mean, even Atlanta summers are not that bad, right? So you can't really have something that operates at those temperatures in a form factor as small as a car without cooking the inhabitants of that car or making the car out of some sort of material that would deflect all that heat, which would make the car heavier and require you to put more energy into it to actually make it move.
It would be pretty awesome for cooking soup on the go, though.
Oh, yeah. No, your soup would be instantaneously cooked.
My intuition says even more than a comfort problem, it just sounds sort of mechanically unstable.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So those sort of applications would be for things like operating a big factory that requires a lot of power, or a power generation plant, or even being able to supply power to an office building or a home. So one of the fuel cells that I kind of mentioned, this is the one I was talking about that made a big splash a few years ago and got a lot of excitement around it. But then once people started figuring out how it was really working, it was still exciting. It just wasn't as mysterious. It's called the Bloom Box. Now, the Bloom Box, a few years ago, it was one of these things where people were really vague about what was going on. It was a box that was generating electricity, and there wasn't a lot of actual...
But you can't look inside.
It almost seemed like that.
Yeah.
The very early days of the promotional material. Like, it seemed like it could have been one of those wacky perpetual motion type devices or free energy devices that never pan out because, I don't know, thermodynamics, it's hard to get around, right? So basic laws of physics are difficult to break. So once it came out about exactly how it was generating power, people were like, oh no, this totally makes sense. It's refining a technology that we've known about for a really long time.
Yeah.
And there are actual improvements that make it more useful, but it's not mysterious, right?
Yeah.
It was fuel cells.
Yeah. And just to put in, I mean, we've known about fuel cells since about 1839, once Sir William Grove invented the first one, based on his hypothesis that, you know, you could reverse the whole process. Well, okay, so he knew that that water can be split into hydrogen and oxygen by running electric current through it. He thought, hey, maybe we can do the opposite.
Yeah, and it turns out he's right. That's electrolysis, by the way, when you use electricity to split water molecules into their basic units, the hydrogen and oxygen. And in fact, that's one of the ways that people have talked about generating hydrogen. We'll get into that a little bit later. So in the case of the Bloom Box or the Bloom Energy boxes, they're using solid oxide fuel cells. It's a little bit different from the ones that we're talking about with the permeable membrane. So the solid oxide ones operate at a higher temperature than permeable membrane. So they work fine as a standalone unit that's connected to a building, but not necessarily a great choice for, say, a vehicle. But they also they also generate a little bit of carbon dioxide in the process. So it's a small amount compared to the amount of water that is given off, but it's still one of those things where you'd say, okay, this is not, it's not as desirable as, say, a pure hydrogen fuel cell in the sense that it's still generating CO2.
Right.
You know, and we generally think that if we can cut back on producing CO2, that would be a good thing.
That's ideal.
Yeah. So let's get into some of the problems with fuel cells, or challenges if you prefer, if you want to look at it as challenges as opposed to a problem.
Yeah, this sounds pretty good. So basically no emissions and all that. Why don't I have a fuel cell car?
Okay, a few different reasons. Some of them are practical, some of them are environmental, some of them are safety oriented. So first of all, hydrogen is the main fuel we're talking about. Apart from the methane ones that are still being looked at, hydrogen's really what we're concentrating on with fuel cells.
Well, that should be easy. You just go outside with a jar and swing it around to collect those clouds of hydrogen you see floating everywhere.
Oh, if only that were the case. Yeah.
How do you get pure hydrogen?
It's not easy, because hydrogen in its pure form is in really short supply here on Earth. Hydrogen is one of those things that tends to bond with everybody. It wants to be everyone's best friend.
Yeah.
And so that's why, if you've ever heard the term hydrocarbons, there are a lot of different ones out there. Hydrogen tends to bond with lots of stuff.
My guess is that I'd imagine a lot of the hydrogen on Earth is in water, right?
A lot of it is, but it's in a lot of stuff. So getting that hydrogen means that you have to expend some energy to get the actual fuel, right? So you have to start doing calculations. How much energy do you have to expend in order to get the fuel you're going to use to create energy? If it ends up being the same amount or more, then obviously you're on the losing side of that.
Yeah, so if you imagine you go back and use electrolysis to get the hydrogen out of the water, you have to create electric current
right.
to get pure hydrogen to put in your fuel cell to create electric current.
Right.
So
right.
how are you getting the original electric
exactly.
current?
And even your ideal fuel cell vehicle kind of thing would only be operating at maybe 60-65% efficiency.
Yeah, that's on the high end too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're talking about how you're still losing some of that potential energy, right? Some of it's just going into heat and not driving your car. So you have to worry about that as well. So there are all these things you have to take into account. One thing you could do is if you really wanted to, you could build a solar farm to generate the electricity to zap the water to make the hydrogen to make the cars go. And the green grass goes all around and around. So, there's obviously different ways. And there's some scientists who are looking into new ways to harvest hydrogen that could pan out and end up being a solution to at least one part of this problem. But that's just one part.
Right. Even if we did have unlimited access to unbonded hydrogen, we would have to have some kind of infrastructure in place in order to get the hydrogen to you, Joe, with your fancy fuel cell vehicle.
No.
Oh, yeah. I imagine. See, hydrogen is probably harder to transport than something like gasoline or oil,
yeah.
isn't it? Because
yeah, you have
that's
to,
a liquid.
Yeah, you end up pressurizing this gas. Also, by the way, hydrogen, a little bit flammable.
Yes.
So, I don't know if you ever watched this video that went viral a few years ago about the Hindenburg.
More than a few years ago,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
But yeah,
well, hey, some of us are older than others.
Too soon.
Too soon? Oh, the humanity. So, yeah, hydrogen is very flammable. It's very dangerous stuff. And so there are valid safety concerns about putting this stuff into pressurized canisters, because you can't, another part of the problem is because it's less energy dense than other fuels, in order for you to have enough of it to make your car go as far as you want it to,
you need more volume,
which means you can't carry unlimited volume because you don't have unlimited space. So you have to cram more and more of it into a pressurized canister.
Unless you have a TARDIS?
Unless you have a TARDIS where it's larger on the inside than on the outside, but I don't think the TARDIS runs on hydrogen.
I would also imagine the TARDIS would make most of this discussion obsolete.
well, you know.
Pshaw.
All right, so barring any sonic screwdrivers entering into the conversation, you have to have pressurized canisters to hold this stuff. And so there's a danger issue. There's also the building the infrastructure so you can get the hydrogen to where it needs to be. That's obviously a multi-billion dollar problem, right, to build out an infrastructure. We have such an established infrastructure, particularly in the United States, for gasoline. And then also for diesel fuel as well, but mainly gasoline for most of the cars that are on the road in the U.S., that are at least, you know, consumer cars, not necessarily municipal vehicles or whatever. So building out that infrastructure is a huge financial practical problem where you've got to figure out where does the money come from. And it's one of those kind of chicken or the egg issues where, you know, until people have the vehicles, then no one wants to support the infrastructure, but you can't have the vehicle without the infrastructure. It's a catch 22. So a chicken or egg catch 22. Hey, I'm going to just mix metaphors for the rest of this podcast.
Excellent.
Why stop now? But that's another problem. So you've got the risk, you've got the fuel supply, you've got the infrastructure. That's another issue. These are all non-trivial problems. It doesn't mean that we should turn away from the challenge, because this is a very promising way of delivering energy in multiple respects, not just with vehicles. But it does mean we have to keep that in mind when we look at the problem.
Absolutely. Here in the U.S., we do have the Hydrogen Fuel Initiative, which funds research into fuel cells and all of this infrastructure and chemistry and physics of the entire thing, with the goal of having a cost-effective method of making this go by, like, 2020.
Right. Some people have said that it's a good start, but that the program itself is possibly more modest than what the challenge requires.
Oh, absolutely.
That's probably the best political way to say that.
Yeah.
There are other countries, obviously, that I don't mean to alarm you, but there are other countries besides the United States. I know.
I've been lied to all my life.
Yeah. Some of them even celebrated New Year's before we did. That's just
treason.
Yeah, it's
some
too
of them
much
don't
energy.
Even celebrate the 4th of July. I don't get it.
Yeah, what's up with that? You know, so Anyway, we do acknowledge there are other countries in the United States. Obviously, we live here in the U.S., so a lot of our focus is on the U.S., but there are other countries that are also looking into hydrogen, some of which have employed more hydrogen vehicles than you would see in the U.S., percentage-wise. There are hydrogen-based vehicles in the U.S. already. A lot of them are, again, municipal vehicles, government vehicles, or public transportation vehicles, things like that. But there aren't that many consumer ones just because there aren't that many places where you could refuel. You know, so that's, until we solve that problem, then clearly that's gonna hold things back.
So an impression I'm getting is that we have to make this great investment to get the hydrogen we need in order to power the fuel cell. So energy has to go into creating this fuel that's going to create the energy. Obviously, the fuel cell provides an emissions advantage, but is there any case in which it actually provides an energy efficiency advantage, or is it always going to be at an energy efficiency loss to the benefit of lowering emissions?
Well, this is a really tricky thing to answer because, generally speaking, fuel cell vehicles tend to be more efficient than gasoline-powered vehicles. However, gasoline is more energy-dense than hydrogen. So you've got multiple factors here. So how do you measure that? You could measure it in how far you could travel on one full tank, right? That would be one way of saying it. So if you could have a hydrogen-based vehicle and on a full tank, it could travel further than your average gasoline-powered vehicle, and you've got fewer emissions involved, on the face of it, at least on just the vehicle side of this equation, the hydrogen one comes out ahead, right? Mm-hmm. Literally ahead, because it can travel further. But then you have to look, like you were saying, at the back end. How much energy?
Production process.
Right. But see, generating gasoline also requires energy. You have
Certainly
to expend
true.
Energy
yeah.
to get the petroleum. You have to expend energy to refine it. You have to spend energy to ship that gasoline to where it needs to be. It's such a huge problem that, I mean, like a huge consideration that I don't have an answer for you simply because I don't have enough information from all of these different aspects to boil it all down and finally, you know, make that bar graph, right? Of mm-hmm. which one comes out on top.
So, and even when you take conventional electric batteries into the equation too, you know, you're charging those from a wall socket. And where is that
electricity coming from? Is it coming from a coal-powered plant? We've said that several times in this show because it bears repeating.
Sure.
Because it's one of those things that we easily take for granted. You think, oh, electricity, that's clean energy. You're not creating any emissions. Well, it all depends on how that electricity was generated in the first place.
Yeah. Sure. And the numbers that I've seen on electric car batteries, since I've mentioned the other two, range from the 20-25% of gasoline-powered vehicles all the way up to 60-65%, depending on where you're getting that energy to charge the battery.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of different considerations here. It would also depend on how are we creating the energy where we're getting that hydrogen, right?
Yeah.
What are we using to get to the hydrogen? If we're using petroleum-based products or petroleum-based fuel sources for us to be able to get the hydrogen, we've really just shifted the problem to a different side, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like any power generation. You have to look at where is that energy coming from ultimately, besides the sun.
And even if you use a solar farm in order to drive all this, then how are you creating those photovoltaics that are driving the solar farm?
Yeah, well, I guess everything you'd eventually have to look at in terms of relative, you know, it's going to take some energy to make this thing, but is it less than
what? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And are you producing fewer emissions at the end?
Yeah.
Now, it could mean that it may be that, you know, maybe getting the hydrogen requires less energy. Let's just say for a moment that let's say we found a way to get hydrogen. It takes less energy than it would take for us to get petroleum and then refine that into gasoline. However, maybe there's also the possibility that by getting that hydrogen, it actually creates a more environmentally damaging process than, say, getting petroleum would be. Hmm. That's a possibility too. And then you have to sit there and say, well, from an energy perspective, now hydrogen makes sense. But from an environmental perspective, it might not. You have to take all of that into consideration.
I certainly accept that in the abstract. I am trying to picture what that hydrogen environmental crisis would be. I'm not sure.
If you're getting all your hydrogen from water, and there are people who would make the argument of, well, we've already got this water this water location problem, where there are places in the world that have limited to no access to clean drinking water, and you're using water to create fuel, there's a perception issue there. Even if you were to argue, well, just based on logistics, getting water from this one part of the world to take it to this other part of the world that has less access doesn't make a whole lot of sense in any other practical application. It's still a perception problem.
Yeah. Of course, if your car's produced water.
So yeah. Joe just wants to, and this is not a lie, Joe just wants to see a fuel cell in operation and have an exhaust pipe that's dripping water into a glass and then watch me drink it. That's what Joe wants.
I mean,
this is a literal conversation that we have had multiple times.
And
yes.
Here's the thing. I do it because you're talking about hydrogen and oxygen combining to form pure water. It's probably cleaner water than I would get anywhere else.
I mean, assuming that the exhaust pipe isn't made of pure lead or something like that.
Well, yeah, if I drink, I'm like, it's delicious, but I'm blind now, then obviously I've made a terrible decision.
Never trust Joe, I think, is the moral of this story.
Well, if we wanted to talk a little bit, I actually can chat just a bit about the Toyota vehicle that's a concept vehicle. It's, you know, it's a prototype vehicle.
So we're recording this the week before Jonathan's about to head out to CES.
Yeah, and I'm going to get a chance to see one of these concept vehicles in person. I don't know which one specifically I'm going to see because Toyota's actually made a few of them.
Mm-hmm. And just for full disclosure, Toyota is, of course, the sponsor of the show.
Forward thinking. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and Toyota's not the only auto manufacturer that's created a fuel cell vehicle. There are others as well, but it's the one that I'm familiar with because I've been doing research for my trip. And so they're using, again, pressurized hydrogen, just like we've been talking about, to generate the electricity. But it also, the ones they are looking at also have a battery. So the reason why they have a battery is to augment the electricity given off by the fuel cell. So the battery helps the car start up from going from off to on. It also helps in low energy applications. So when you're accelerating to get to cruising speed, once you hit cruising speed, it switches over to fuel cell. And then if you ever hit like a really steep incline and your car needs more energy, it'll tap into the battery for extra power to provide the oomph needed to take on whatever that happens to be.
That's really interesting. So this is a different kind of hybrid than we're used to hearing about. Normally a hybrid would be combination gasoline and electric power,
right,
but like wall socket electric power.
Right.
This is a hybrid of fuel cell fuel and wall
electric power.
Well,
yeah.
Well, would it also have wall socket electric power?
Yes.
Or is the battery, it's not that the battery is also fueled by the fuel cell.
No. The way it works is that you would charge your battery just like you would with an electric vehicle. It would also have regenerative braking so that when you were braking, it would start to regenerate that into, to recharge the battery. But, And I assume that the fuel cell also could provide some electricity to recharge the battery, but that just seems silly. You know, at some point you're like, well, you're losing energy on all of these
transfers,
right?
So, right. Yeah. Also, I'm wondering about the power output of this vehicle, because if normally we rely on a gasoline engine to back up an electric battery, then if we're relying on an electric battery to back up a hydrogen fuel cell.
Well, I can tell you that according to Toyota, their FCHV Advanced vehicle.
Oh, of course.
They like letters over there.
All right, so you've got pressurized hydrogen tanks that are essentially on the bottom of the car. It's more like a SUV.
Do they glow purple?
I'm sure you could get neon highlights if you wanted to, but they don't on their own glow purple.
Sorry. I'm being
if they
serious.
Glow purple on their if they glow
car.
Purple on their own, you may need to seek shelter. No, they don't glow purple, but they have these tanks on the bottom of the car, and it intakes oxygen just as you drive. So it's pulling oxygen in from air intake vents on the front of the vehicle. On a full tank of hydrogen, actually, technically, I think it's two tanks, because I think they have two side by side. But when it's fully fueled, this vehicle can go 830 kilometers, which is about 516 miles, which is further than a lot of gasoline-powered vehicles.
Yeah, I think 300 is about the average for gasoline.
For a long time, the electric car industry, they were saying, oh, we need to crack that 200 miles on a single charge or else no one will ever want these things. And so it shows how far we've gone, because with that battery and the fuel cell combination, that allows this vehicle to have a much further range than what you would get with just one or the other. And so at 516 miles, that's pretty impressive. So I would say that I don't know how fast, I don't know what the top speed of this vehicle is, but it certainly has the range that someone would typically look for when looking at a vehicle. And so I think it's really an interesting approach. I'm really looking forward to seeing some of this stuff in person and talking. I'm going to get a chance to talk to some of the experts who developed the technology that was being used in these vehicles. And that's also really exciting. The idea that I get to talk to some of the engineers who, you know, this is what they do. They develop these and refine them so that they can become a viable technology that we could use in the future. And that to me is, I mean, that's the best part of my job, is being able to talk to the folks who actually make the stuff I talk about. So I'm looking forward to it. But as I said, there are other auto manufacturers that are working on fuel cell vehicles. And of course, like I said, there are also some fuel cell vehicles that are out there already. There are also some vehicles that run on hydrogen, but they are combustion engines. So it's hydrogen as combustion, as a combustible fuel, as opposed to a fuel cell.
Huh. Yeah. I wouldn't even know. What's the output,
or yeah,
like the emissions when you burn hydrogen?
You know, I'd have to look into all of that. I know that it's lower emissions than what you would get with gasoline, but I know that some bus systems use hydrogen fuel for their buses. So instead of, I mean, we're talking like large vehicles generally, things that require a lot of torque, but not necessarily a lot of speed, unless you're Keanu Reeves, in which case you can't get below 55 miles per hour.
Yeah, we know how it works, Jonathan. We were alive in the 90s.
I was just wondering. I didn't know if you were old enough to get into the movie theater when that came out.
I think we probably both saw that on HBO.
Not HBO. I saw it edited for television.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot
of,
like,
that's the best one. All the expletives are,
a lot of the vulgarities turned into errs and uhs.
Yeah, those are the best. All right. Anything else you guys have to say about fuel cells before we wrap up?
I want one.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. There are actually science kits out there that sell fuel cells where you can get like a little model car that runs on fuel cells. We should totally get one for the office.
Yeah,
we should.
Would actually love a little model, like one of those table demonstrations they have,
yeah,
you know.
Like the clear ones.
Cause a lot of people have probably done it the other way around. You've tried electrolysis, right? Like
yeah.
You run a current through some water and make little bubbles and like, ooh, cute bubbles. But this would do the opposite.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll look into that. But at any rate, if you guys out there have anything you want to say, you know, you want to join in on this conversation, or you want to see all the other stuff that we create in Forward Thinking, go to fwthinking.com. That is our home site. You're going to find all the podcasts there, the blog posts, the videos are all there. And remember, you can touch base with us on Google+, on Twitter, and Facebook. Our handle is FWThinking. We look forward to hearing from you, and you'll hear from us again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.